Hello.
Right, and welcome to episode number 38 yes. of the M2 Weekly Podcast.
We tried streaming live.
We
on
did.
Facebook.
We keep trying to stream live on Facebook, and Facebook
we decide
is not
Facebook
cooperating.
Hates us. It they does. Are one of the biggest online engines.
It knows
in
we're trying to do stuff on
and
Twitch.
It doesn't like us.
It's a jilted lover. Yeah, Facebook. You don't like Twitch. I understand, but we're trying to use both of you guys. Come on.
That
polyamory.
Like
polystreamy amory.
We're not Mormons. I think we can avoid the polyamorous relationship here.
All right. Well, anyway, Adam.
We're not Mormons.
Yes, it's
I
true.
Don't understand.
Adam.
Hi, I'm Eben. How are you?
Eben.
Good evening.
Good evening. Eben Matthews.
Yes, Adam Martin.
And we are M2.
Yep.
And how's the week, man?
Good. We're a couple of Manhattans into the evening. We should explain this.
Exactly. Not enough, but a couple.
Yes. More may come.
Yes.
We do our best work with alcohol and the occasional cigar.
And a little silliness.
Yes, it's good.
Yes, good.
Yes, very nice indeed.
So how was your week?
Week was good.
What happened this week?
Final week of prep for me on Future Man.
Yes.
So we start shooting. I am up at 4:15 tomorrow morning.
Yes.
To be on set at 5:30.
Almost 10:30 now, so you're fine. Good at, you know, all right.
It's fun. I won't, countdown. I never sleep the night before a shoot anyway.
Yes.
As we said.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for 20 years. And
yes.
I was up most of last night with work anxiety dreams.
Yes.
Most of them revolving around Josh Hutcherson, funnily enough. Which is really bizarre because he's great.
Right.
But I was explaining complicated filmmaking things to him and why it wasn't working. And I don't know what wasn't working, but that was what I was doing
now,
the entire
will
night,
you
which
tell,
was so stressful.
Will you tell him this when you see him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
All right, so the jump cut in the video here is me giving spoilers that I am not allowed to
give. I will get into amazing trouble for
trying to get Adam fired here. Sorry. Yes, so we may revisit that moment.
We will revisit that in about
Man 2
6
is
months' time.
Airing
when
Future
Man is.
Yes, very good.
Yes.
So, erase.
But in the meantime, it's all good.
Yes.
And,
Josh Hutcherson is great.
He's
and
great.
You're going to explain
fantastic.
Filmmaking terms to him.
I'm
going to
explain
tomorrow.
What we're up to in the coming little bit.
So, the
it'll
dream
be far
like,
less stressful
so Josh,
in real life.
This is an over the shoulder, and he's like, an over the what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's amazing. Yes. Yes. No, it'll be good.
Yes.
It'll be good. And
so,
are
you excited? I mean, this sounds like, without giving any spoilers, this sounds like a fun season. It's
going to be great.
Yeah.
Yes, it really is. There's some challenging stuff, as always. It wouldn't be the show if it wasn't. But it's also, it's funny. I had our gaffer, we had a meeting last week, which, and often the meetings pre-production tend to be pretty dry.
And for anyone who doesn't know what's a gaffer?
Sorry, a gaffer is the person in charge of the lighting.
Yes.
So you have your cinematographer. And then right underneath him are your gaffer and your key grip. And essentially the gaffer, the lighting department, which the gaffer is the head, they set the lights. And then the grip department manipulates the light.
Yes.
That is the basic kind of structure of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the cinematographer, myself, the assistant director, and the director kind of work together to create the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what we do. And the gaffer, we had finished a pre-production meeting, which are often very dry, and they involve going through, okay, in this scene, there are 5 people, and what happens in this scene, and they do this, and they pick up their chopsticks, and they
spoiler
they
alert!
Across the thing. Yeah. There are no chopsticks. I made it up. Hi, see, I've learned. And it's incredibly dry. And the gaffer actually said at the end of it, I don't think I've ever heard as much laughter in one of those meetings as before. Which is very satisfying.
That bodes well.
It bodes very, very well. It's a great season. There's also always something amusing about engaging in incredibly raunchy dialogue with minors present. having learned that firsthand myself, season 1, with my son and watching a pilot with my then 9-year-old son.
Yes.
Who
was in that pilot.
Who was then ended up in the pilot. Yes. There was all sorts of stuff happened in the Future Man pilot. If you haven't seen it, it's amazing.
Yes.
But the very one of the opening scenes is these characters talking about what video game characters they want to have sex with.
Yes.
And I thought that was going to be the worst part of it. And it wasn't. by a long way.
Not by a long way.
And I had to explain various kind of bodily functions and facts of life to my 9-year-old.
9-year-old, yes. And did he see the rest of the season?
Oh, no, we did. No, we watched the whole season. Yeah. Quite heavily edited, it has to be said. But we did watch the season together. It was very, very
Another fun. 13 minutes of the entire season, yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm a terrible parent. Yes. We may as well establish that now.
Yes. But yes. For the rest of us, very fun.
And how are things with you?
Good. It's been a good week. Lots of Lemley stuff. Mm-hmm. So most fun for me. It's been actually been quite a good little bit of time since I've dug into actually creating the art for one of these projects. Of course. It's been fun. So
because we normally produce and farm out the actual art.
Exactly. So the wrinkle with Lemley is that I was part of the team that rebranded the whole theater chain and really kind of established the look and feel of that rebranding. And so it's always been a toss up when we've done stuff with them where there's some certain amount of it which does feel like we can farm out, and then there's certain amounts of it which I probably could farm out, but it feels like it's just, kind of easier for me to actually take the reins and kind of create that stuff. And so in this case,
especially as you've established the style and it's so very clearly your art style.
It is. And it's a variation on my kind of normal art style, in that the aesthetic for Lemley that we've created is this sort of paper cutout sort of, kind of simplified drawing style, which I have come to really like. And so, this one gets to be a lot of fun because it's a series that involves a lot of movie references. And so getting to figure out, as an example, what does a Dr. Frankenstein, Lemley Lamb look like? Or what does a Hannibal Lecter Lemley Lamb look like? And then translating that into this sort of graphic, paper cutout style that we developed has been a lot of fun. And so, it's cool. It's something that, it's one of those things where it's always a little bit of a toss up where, we've got so many other things going on that there's a part of me that wants to be able to just, focus on that other stuff. And yet at the same time, this is a fun project and, it does scratch a particular creative itch, which I don't scratch that often anymore, for better or worse. And so it's kind of fun to be able to jump in.
Make art sound like herpes.
it's
contagious. It sticks with you. You can't get rid of it.
I've never quite put it in those terms, but I can't say that that's wrong. I mean, I'm fully infected. There's no question. I am a carrier, even when I'm not experiencing it.
You see, I feel like the metaphor works on many, many levels.
No, it really does. I mean, it's in my bloodstream, even when I'm not exhibiting an outbreak.
It's just not contagious in quite some way.
I try to make it as contagious as possible. So, try to nail
it out of context.
Nail as many people with that art as I possibly can. Spread the seed.
Mm-hmm. Spread the love.
Going back to polyamory. Yes. love you, honey.
So I should be very concerned right around now. It's great.
Anyway. but it is an interesting point of view to think about, when you are producing and directing things, then also kind of balancing what things do you put your personal time into versus the kind of overview of a bunch of things. I do find there are certain things that, you make the judgment call, or I make the judgment call, where I'm sure I could sort of work with someone to find the aesthetic that we developed, but at the same time, it was something that I created to begin with, and it's something that I feel very fluent in because of that. Yeah. And so the time that it takes me to put these things together feels, rightly or wrongly, like a fraction of what it would actually take to actually get what I need from somebody else. And that's not to diminish anyone else's talent. It's just that it's a language that I literally developed on to begin with. And so I think it's a little bit easier in this particular case to just jump in and knock it out. Now, to that said, it's like, there's nothing I love more than working with Steven on Dead Town, or, the team that we put together on Back to Earth, where it is much more collaborative.
Yes.
But the both wonderful and terrible part of something like this is that it's so particular in its aesthetic, that, it's like getting that voice from somebody else, well, certainly could be possible, given the time frames that we're working with, is also, you know, it is that sort of toss up. And so I think in this particular case, it just makes sense for me to do it. And it's, you know, frankly, been kind of fun as well.
So, oh, yeah, exactly.
So lots of that this past week, actually delivering the first of a series of shorts that's going to be in Lemley Theaters starting next week. So if you see, it's that quick.
Up and running that fast. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So if you're in a Lemley Theater in Los Angeles and see something that looks fun Flamish. And graphic and sort of Field of Dreams-y, that's something that we did.
Can you say that?
Yeah, I can say that. Yeah. Yeah, we're not constrained by the same.
Okay, good.
We're not constrained by this guy's death by torture chamber Hulu contract.
Yes.
yes. So it lots of fun. I mean, I'm really happy with how this first one came out.
No, it's looking great.
It's fun, it's and really, funny, really cool. And getting to create these sort of characters based on classic movies I love is also
a ton of fun. Like when we were brainstorming the idea on a Sunday night after a couple of cocktails, and it was just. It was the fun of how to wrap in these kind of classic movie references into something vaguely informational. Was great.
Exactly. Yeah. So vaguely informational, meaning this is for the pre-roll that you'll see at Lemley Theaters, which is the series of messaging that you get at all theaters. But we try to have some fun with the thank you for coming and go get some popcorn. Please shut the fuck up.
Exactly.
And don't annoy your neighbors. And again, thank you for coming.
That was occurring to me for some reason. Shut the fuck up. Part of it was occurred recently. So, a little backstory. So, I've been an opera fan since I was probably about 14 or 15, when I was a huge heavy metal fan.
Mm.
And my mother, in desperation, would take me to the opera.
Yes.
As the kind of counter programming. And I would go to the opera and I would actually really enjoy it, but I would go in like Iron Maiden t-shirts and Metallica t-shirts, whatever else. And so, since my children have been about, I think, 3 and 4 respectively, we've been going to the opera. And it was one of the proudest moments of opera going life.
Yes.
Was at the age of 10 in kind of nice seats with my then 10-year-old, my daughter at the age of 10. Someone was talking as the overture kicked off, and she turned to them and went, "Shh." And this kind of grown man did this total double take about being shut up by a 10-year-old girl. It was wonderful. It was so great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Made me very, very proud. Yeah, now you've given me a standard for my children that I have to, now put some time and effort into.
Well, we've already decided. I think we're going to take Austin to the opera next year.
Yes, yep, absolutely.
There's some good ones coming up, and I think we should do that.
No, we absolutely should do that.
It'd be a lot of fun.
So, she wants, as a total aside, but my daughter's about to be 5 and about a month and a half's time, and she wants to go rock climbing on her birthday.
Yes.
So
we've already established the gym. We know what we're doing.
And then some opera sounds like a good follow up to that.
I think it'd be great.
Be a physical and cultural birthday
milestone
celebration. Exactly. Yes.
Good.
Very good. Good. Yeah. So lots of Lemley stuff, and then also we are writing right now season 2 of Dead Town on the Yarn platform. So
we've literally just finished
editing the first script for episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone that doesn't know, we did a prequel series on Yarn, which is a very cool digital storytelling platform that as a total aside, we always thought for Dead Town, which is our flagship Macroverse series, that we would never say how the apocalypse sort of zombie outbreak happens or started.
Yes.
And we don't
we
get real explicit,
to it,
but we do actually go to that time frame and kind of say where it started.
Yes.
On
we don't
Yarn.
Get into the origin, but we get into
kind of where the outbreak
story
starts
as the outbreak starts.
Exactly. Yes. So you kind of get the origin there, and then we've developed a 4-season arc, which we're now in the middle of fleshing out and writing the actual scripts for.
So much fun.
To debut on Yarn over the next kind of month or so.
Yeah.
So
no,
we'll have Dead Town on Yarn pretty much throughout the summer. We're working out the exact release schedule with our partners at Mammoth Media and figuring all that stuff out, but it's exciting stuff. So
it's very, very cool.
And
it is also just fun to be saying. I mean, it's neat working in a new medium.
Because
a lot of comic book stuff, and then we're writing a pilot separate to that, and we're doing various things. And the yarn format is unique and being kind of chat based, and it's kind of great still telling a real story within those confines. It's a great challenge,
and
it works actually incredibly well.
And this is the thing that, I'm sure some people kind of bristle at, but it's one of the things I really love is the challenge of, you know, trying to find those emotional stakes or those kind of character beats, or, you know, trying to find a way to tell those kind of classic things that you're trying to communicate in every story, you know, in a non-conventional way. Right. And so, you know, we try to do this in season one on Yarn, and now looking into season two in Yarn as we're reading, or as we're, you know, writing, and looking forward towards writing three and four, and like trying to even within that format, like where are places that we can kind of push the boundaries or find innovative ways to, you know, use that format to deliver on those kind of classic storytelling, conventions. And so that to me is where it gets really interesting and exciting. It's like, you know, being able to take the things that make good stories in any format, but, you know, adapt them for something more original. Interesting ways to do it in a new way. And,
exactly.
And, that's a good segue into Macroverse, which is our digital comics platform, which we've been developing. So also this week, lots of more conversation with creators and other people that were talking about lots of additional conversation there, and you know, it's starting to get into a phase which I love, which is there's the initial conversations with people that we haven't talked to yet, and then there's the kind of ongoing conversations with people that have signed up to create stuff on the platform. And so now we get to put that kind of showrunner hat on, which is where I think for us, we ultimately see ourselves heading with in terms of Macroverse,
fun is to be had.
Where we're really working with and supporting creators and telling these interesting stories.
Exactly. Kind of shepherding these stories to the app, basically.
Exactly. So lots of fun stuff there. We haven't firmed anything up yet, but, you know, out of one of those conversations, it looks like I at least may be down at Comic-Con for a day, and so we'll have something to talk about there potentially. We may be able to make some announcements over the next, you know, probably 2 to 4 weeks.
Yes.
We're talking to potentially an additional business partner about, you know, coming on board to help the kind of, business development
and fundraising
part of it. Looks like we're going in front of, now segueing into startup land, we're going potentially in front of some additional investors this coming week. So we've been working on finishing up and kind of adding some stuff to our investment deck. So it's a good lot of stuff swirling around.
Exactly.
And then I just want to always kind of end this segment of the show talking directly to creators. So we are absolutely in the phase where we are looking for a variety of projects. You know, it's interesting, actually, one of the people that I talked to this past week, he is developing a webcomic in the kind of LGBT community and kind of dealing with some of those issues that are very personal to him. And, you know, we were talking about some other projects and he just kind of offhandedly mentioned that. And I just want to say, like, you know, it's actually, as much as we love the kind of mainstream, kind of broad audience kind of stuff, and that tends to be a lot of the stuff that we personally develop, I really do see Macroverse as a home for all those sorts of niche audiences and stories as well. And I think it's actually very important that this be a platform that, you know, those sorts of audiences
and
those sorts of stories, you know, can be shared and told. And I think it's a great format to be able to do that in as well. So, you know, I said to him, and I'll say, you know, to anyone listening or watching, you know, don't be misled by Dead Town as our flagship. Like, we're not just looking for, you know, mainstream, you know, horror, superhero, you know, action adventure stuff. Exactly. Like, we really are interested in a very broad range of things. You know, one of the things that I always think about is, there's a category of graphic novel which actually kind of goes direct to bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
And those are often the ones that get, you know, very accoladed. Like, there's, you know, Mouse being kind of the prime example of that, which is absolutely amazing. Yeah, exactly. And there are a handful of, you know, very well
awarded and revered, you know, graphic novels that have never made it, never really been comic store, you know, kind of fair.
Exactly.
And I really do ultimately want Macroverse to be a home for the next Game of Thrones, and at the same time, the next kind of really thought-provoking, yes, you know, interesting, yes, you know, impactful.
Yeah, you my know, mouse kind is a great touch point for that. Actually, it's funny. Yeah. I didn't know that, but yeah, it's a great touch.
Yeah, point. So I think it really runs that gamut, and so that's a long way around to say that, you know, creators, whatever it is that you're creating, you know, we want this to be a home for your passion projects, for the things that you want to say, for the things that you want to communicate to the world, to the audience, mm-hmm, you know, out there. And, you know, we'd love to talk to you about those projects. So, you know, get in touch with us at action@m2.ninja,
mm-hmm,
and let us know what you're thinking about, what you're working on, and let's set a time to talk and figure out how to work together to make those things happen in this format.
Please.
It's a good combination. We'd love to do it.
It is.
So, weekly topic.
Yes. Yes. So we've broached the idea of story world.
So thinking about, so a lot of the way that we think about content, and so I thought we'd just kind of break that down in this show, is about developing story worlds and developing connections between different platforms, mm-hmm, different types of storytelling. So very much as we were talking about with Dead Town, yeah, and the yarn stuff that we're kind working of
intertwining
on.
Intertwining threads within a story.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the categories on Macroverse as well that we're, you know, kind of figuring out the parameters around is actually creating a set of anthologies that people can play inside of. So, you know, here's a crime world, here's a sci-fi world, here's a, you know, I don't know, a horror
whatever
world.
Whatever it might be, exactly. And here are the rules of that
genre-oriented rules that people can then play inside of. And so that's a broad version, and then a more specific version is the sort of story world concept. And so we do it for most of our original content,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, just sort of one of the ways that we think about things is creating this kind of broader set of rules and ideas that you can then tell a bunch of different stories inside of,
yeah,
and that also then give you this sort of flexibility to work in a bunch of different mediums.
Right.
And
frankly, give you the fun to do that, because I think it is, it's part of, obviously, as fans of large intertwining worlds, story worlds in general, it is the Easter eggs. It's the geek in me, obviously, but there's a few things more satisfying than kind of getting to the end of season 7 on a show.
Yes.
And going back and watching season 1 and seeing all the little points of reference where they didn't tie that up. And so you do realize they had this kind of overarching concept in mind.
Well, and this is the thing that, you know, that comics do so well, that, you know, Star Wars has become, it's, you know, this sort of universe of interconnected content that kind of provides this basic groundwork or framework that you can then build a bunch of different stuff inside of. And it's those sorts of universes, those sorts of story worlds that also give a variety of creators sort of an opportunity to play inside of. And so, you know, it's the the idea that you could, you know, this hasn't really happened, but you could theoretically take, you know, the world of Middle Earth and, you know, create a whole different set of characters and a whole different set of adventures given the rules and the world that's been established in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. You know, it's like there's enough material there to kind of extrapolate, you know, what that is. Or you could take the world that we've, you know, seen within Game of Thrones and easily figure out, you know, like, oh, there could be these other characters, these other adventures.
Which still was a huge part of what HBO are doing to spin off, you know, after next season of Game of Thrones, which is going to wrap it up.
Yep.
They're
developing three different spin-offs.
The other stories, or obviously what Star Wars doing with Benioff and Baker, the other showrunners
of Game of Thrones, as well as Rian Johnson creating his own trilogy.
Exactly. And to spin off and do a Game of Game of Thrones in space, for want of a better word.
I think Star Wars may, you know, really be kind of the grandfather of this. I mean, it certainly happens in the comics as well, but, you know, I think Star Wars was one of the first that really embraced, you know, starting kind of, I could be wrong, but I think with a novel called A Splinter in the Mind's Eye, where, you know, it's like now we're taking this universe that we've established in films and giving different creators a little bit of license to tell their own stories with these characters in a different format. Mm-hmm. And then that turned into animation, and that turned into other books, and it turned into additional comics, and it turned into video games, right. And you know, all these different ways of exploring the different components and facets of these universes. And of course, you know, some of those are more successful than others, but it, you know, all adds up to the feeling that, you know, this is a really broad world that we can play in. I mean, for us in recent terms, you know, we got brought into this Back to Earth project, which we've talked about for a while. And, you know, when we first got brought into it, you know, one of the things that seemed appealing and that made us want to kind of play in this world was the opportunity to kind of take a facet of what had already been written and created in this live action series and
blow it out into something else.
Exactly. Into something else. And so we, you know, we wrote this comic and animation series that, you know, took the main villain
from the live action series
And then kind of figured out, like, how did he become this guy? And so we created this, you know, kind of interesting backstory for this guy. And then that starts to, you know, kind of open up the opportunities to figure out, okay, so if that's his story, well, now we've created this other set of characters that, you know, fulfill and intertwine with his story.
And augment,
that starts to suggest, again, sort of a broader world. And so, you know, part of that is, you know, we created a whole different faction that they were a part of. Mm-hmm. You know, we create this whole other piece of the universe that, you know, kind of created that. We actually invented the incident that sort of spins off
the entire thing.
And so, you know, gave us that leeway, but it also now, you know, just as an example, you know, creates this groundwork where, you know, if someone else wants to come in, you know, down the road and say, you know, here's more information and more rules about how this world works, now we can go and, you know, explore some other facets of that. You know, with Dead Town as an additional example, we actually just did a refresh on our Story World Bible for Dead Town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we realized we hadn't really done that in a while, and things have changed as we've developed the comic series and kind of gotten to be better writers and creators, if I may say.
Mm-hmm.
So we realized, you know, there were some things that were outdated in there, and so it was actually really fun to go back and revisit that. I mean, this is a, you know, 60-70 page Bible that gets into pretty much every facet of the world. And that, you know, that and some of our other projects have those too. And it's actually very much designed to be able to take that and go, you know, this is how this world functions. These are the rules of this world. These are the factions that live in this mm-hmm. world. These are the way that these different groups interact with each other and the motivations that they have behind them. And so it's information for us to be able to refer back to, but we can also hand that to our, you know, collaborators and to down the road to other creators to, you know, have this kind of central set of agreements about how this whole thing functions.
No, exactly. And
so, you know, this is not the right approach for everyone and for every project, but for those of us that want to kind of develop these sort of big, broad universes to play in.
But I think it is the right approach, unless you're writing kind of, you know, specific comedy or drama. And even I think there's some aspects of this that are important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the pilot we're doing at the moment, we're kind of writing at the moment, and I was talking to a friend, and she would say, well, do the character backgrounds, do the mm-hmm, basis of the mm-hmm. stuff. It doesn't necessarily show up, does not need to necessarily show up in the show itself.
Yes.
But just having that stuff done will help, well, you know, fortify ongoing project.
There's a slight distinction between knowing the world that you're living in mm-hmm. and knowing the characters that you're living in and kind of fleshing out the players in the game, so to speak, versus, you know, necessarily the kind of story world concept. Because to me, the story world concept mm-hmm. is really about creating something that's meant to be big enough for other people to play in. And, mm-hmm. and it's not that, so it's like, you know, writing a TV pilot just logistically, you're creating something that other people are going to play with. Right. You're going to have a writing staff. You're going to have a team that puts that together. But it's to me, there's a slight distinction between
I think you're totally right.
Kind of franchise, you know, story
exactly.
world.
Exactly.
And I think that's the, you know, it's like there's a couple of projects that we're, you know, working on now. We also kind of re-looked at the documentation that we had put together. And they're, again, sort of, you know, figuring out, like, you know, these are the history of this world. These are the groups that exist in this world. And it's sort of like taking that same idea of, like, yes, you want to know the characters' backstories, and that's in there too, but it's a bigger, broader set of rules that are, again, sort of, you know, sort of a thing to put together that a group of people can then have a foundational understanding around, you know, now knowing this, what kind of stories can we tell?
And obviously it is very much the kind of thing that Marvel, we had an extensive conversation about Marvel last week.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing they do very, very well.
Absolutely.
And they took the time to set up the world ahead of the big event blockbusters.
Yeah. They knew were going to happen. Well, and this is one of the debates, you know, just to make it super geeky for a few minutes here. You know, it's like the Marvel versus DC debate. You know, I definitely fall on the side of, you know, Marvel is a world, and I think it's part of what makes it so successful. And it's, of course, all in the execution as well. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, you know, the Marvel universe is our universe with these characters laid over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's about telling these fantastic stories against the backdrop of our real world. And I think it's part of what makes it makes it more challenging on the DC side.
Yes.
Is that, you know, Gotham City, Metropolis, you know, these are
fictional
places overlays
in which essentially these gods are fighting.
Exactly. And so there's an extra layer of mythology that you have to kind of get people engaged in
and embrace
to then tell the story that you want to tell.
And of course, it's definitely possible. You look at the success of a Wonder Woman, where told that story incredibly well.
And I think actually, you know,
you laid these little Easter eggs.
It's
the whole
true.
Thing.
I hadn't showed that in I hadn't thought about it in these terms, but you know, one of the things I think makes Wonder Woman so successful is that actually it does break that a little bit, and that you take this mythological land that Wonder Woman came from, and then you immediately bring her into the reality of our world. You bring her into World War One and into the reality of this kind of historical context.
Your first act break is her stepping out of her world.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that actually is kind of a key component of what makes that work so well is that you bring her, you know, directly into
if she had stayed on Themyscira, what it was called?
Yes, Themyscira,
Themyscira. Yeah. Hey, look at that.
Hey.
it would not have been nearly as engaging.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's
a separate conversation, but it's very definitely applicable across the world. Is you want your heroes to be dealing with problems that people can relate to.
Yep.
You know?
Yep, absolutely.
And in that case, she really did. They did a very good job.
They did a very good job. Yeah,
alive and working.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, and that's one. It's a minor note, but it's one of the things that I think does make the DC universe more challenging. Is that, you know, fundamentally, the concept of Gotham or the concept of Metropolis. It's like if Metropolis is threatened. Okay, cool.
Right.
But if New York is threatened, like we have a more visceral reaction to that, right? So it's just it's just kind of fundamentally built into the fact that it feels more real.
Exactly.
Kind of interesting. So, you know, coming back around to the idea of story worlds, the other thing that I think from an actual production standpoint, and it's something we were actually talking about earlier tonight, vis-a-vis the Dead Town story on Macroverse and the Dead Town story on Yarn, is looking for how do these things connect and intertwine with each other. And so, you know,
they don't have to be kind of, but no, not subtext, the opposite subtext. They don't have to be kind of text.
text.
Mega text. They don't have to be front and center in terms of motivations for scenes and characters, movement, or whatever else.
Absolutely.
But it's great to have them in the back.
Well, it's just looking, you know, I think it's, you know, it's bad when it feels forced, and it's great when it feels natural, right? When it feels when it feels inherently connected. And I think, actually, it's, I think the benefit of having gone through the time, energy, and effort to kind of establish those ground rules to begin with, in that, you know, it's like, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, how could the story that we're telling on the Yarn series and the story that we're telling on the Macroverse series, you know, are there any natural connection points there? And we came to find that, you know, there actually probably are
several.
Probably several. And none of those were like, oh, we need these to be connected. That wasn't that wasn't actually the initial ambition, and it wasn't the reason for telling these two stories. But as they've developed, you're like, oh, there are some natural connections here. And I think that actually more often than not happens because you have created this set of rules that, you know, kind of forms the foundation of this world. You can then
play within.
And so you're going to get to see like, oh, well, if these characters are motivated by this and these characters are motivated by that and they're existing in this same universe and they're you know, dealing with these other characters in common, like, well, there are some natural threads that start to present themselves as being interesting. And so, you know, we haven't decided exactly how that's going to play out, but it looks like there may be some natural connections between those. And so, you know, just as a teaser, you know, as we unfurl the these next seasons on Yarn, and as we continue the story on Dead Town, you know, there looks like there are some interesting,
there are going to be some interesting connections
and crossovers there, and how those timelines fit together, and how those characters, you know, play into the two storylines. And that will only continue to be the case. And so I think that, you know, for us, it's where it gets fun is it's the puzzle, even when you don't know that it's a puzzle. It's the, you know, these pieces all do fit into this same universe in some way. And you know, I think that's where, you know, as fans, you know, I think a lot of people really do get a kick out of, you know, starting to also be able to play the game of like, oh, we know these all live in the same universe.
Exactly.
So how do these pieces all fit together? And, you know, how do these timelines fit together? And how do these characters relate to each other? And, you know, it becomes this kind of game that we get to participate in together.
Which is such as fun.
Creators and fans. And it is very fun. So, you know, for those of you that are interested in, you know, creating these sort of more franchise-oriented things, I think, you know, let yourself go crazy. And it's, you know, fundamentally about, you know, finding that foundational, you know, kind of world building, that set of rules, that set
that
of
you can then establish
context that, you know, can be helpful.
Construct everything else.
No matter, you know, who you're working with, even if you're the only ones that are ever going to use that documentation, it's worth the time to, figure that out.
Yes,
and, exactly. Have that, you know, as a resource going forward, so you know everything is kind of coming from this grounded place and this grounded position.
That's very stuff. Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much fun.
So, Adam.
Hoojama flip of the week.
Yeah, so remind me, what's a Hoojama flip?
The Hoojama flip is the, you know, I can't think of a name right now, but it has something vaguely relevant to do with what we're discussing.
So it's a whatchamacallit.
Exactly. It's a thing of both.
So and in this context, it's a, what are you thinking about?
What are we thinking of? What have we done this week?
Top of mind. Sometimes it's pop culture-y. Sometimes it's self-help-ish.
Exactly.
You know, whatever you think about. So what's yours?
Mine for the week has been, so reworking a pitch for a show that we're developing.
Yes.
And having to do the character breakdowns for it. And we touched on this earlier. But it's you forget how important it is to know who the people are that are inhabiting your world.
Yes.
And so I think especially when I think this might account for the fact that the first couple of drafts of Dead Town, for example, were not very good, was that we, at some point we'll release these things.
Yes.
It'll be funny.
Subscribers.
Yes. We, you have a cool idea and you have a cool setup for a story.
Yes.
And you start creating based on the cool idea and the cool setup and here's what it is. And then you get into it and realize that actually the characters aren't right for supporting the story mm-hmm. that you want to tell. Mm-hmm. And therefore you're kind of reverse engineering the characters to fit the story, which then just doesn't
work.
Feel satisfying yeah. mm-hmm. remotely. And I think that's where you end up when you're with your kind of, you know, blockbuster loud movies where they style supersedes substance.
Absolutely.
I would say. And that's...
Well, especially when you ultimately, you know, I think at least we believe that, you know, your characters are the things that actually should be driving the
exactly.
story and the plot versus yep. the plot driving the characters. Yeah, absolutely.
So traditional, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that was very interesting, seeing mm-hmm. that in such stark relief. And then, frankly, the fun of working on that kind of character breakdown again. Mm. Like I haven't done that for a while, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of great. Like, oh, wait, this is really cool. We can incorporate this. You can pull in this. Mm-hmm. This line this person actually said, and this, you know, all these disparate threads coming together to create something unique was very exciting. Mm. So, yes. In my not very much free time.
And speaking of Future Man co-creator Seth Rogen, I was just listening to something earlier that is related to what you were just saying.
Yes.
Which he said this was something that he actually got from Judd Apatow, which I think is quite relevant as well, which is that in... the type of writing that he and Evan do, mm-hmm. that they're very much thinking about the plot versus the story. And the definition that he gave was that the plot are the things that happen.
Right.
The story is what are you trying to say.
Interesting.
And I think that's a very interesting distinction to be considering as mm-hmm. we're diving into all this stuff. That it's like, you know, and that I think is relevant or related to, it's like the characters drive the story.
Yes.
And then the plot are the actual events that
right.
happen, and that those things are not at all necessarily the
related,
same.
Related, it's true.
So.
It's interesting because script notes had a similar thing. Mm-hmm. They were talking about the kind of... The major coincidence that
yes.
is allowed in a
yes,
screenplay.
Yes, the one coincidence
the
allowed,
one coincidence
allowed,
is
in,
allowed
a
in
a
screenplay.
Yeah.
If you have two more, you know, maybe you get over two. If you have mm-hmm. any more than that, then
yeah.
it's just a series of events. I mean,
yeah.
someone once described history as just one damn thing happening after another, which is great, but your
yeah.
story, your movie can then become that incredibly easily
yeah.
because you get wrapped up in, oh, this cool thing happens, then this cool thing happens, and this
yes.
cool thing
yeah.
happens, and you stop paying attention to how, actually, in that first scenario, your character goes, oh, fuck this, I'm going to go left into the
yes.
right,
yeah.
and they're not there for the events 2, 3, and 4 that you thought
yeah.
were really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's reading this a long time ago in the book, The French Lieutenant's Woman, John Fowles. It was a Meryl Streep movie with Jeremy Irons.
Okay, yeah.
She won one of her many Oscars for it at some point.
Yeah.
But the book is amazing. And at some point in the book, because the author he steps in as narrator of his own novel every now and then, which
yes.
is very interesting. Kind of breaks the fourth wall of the book. And he talks about how he has this section there about how his kind of character capriciously... He had wanted him to walk back to the village where actually capriciously he kind of walked up the hill and had this conversation with the local lumberjack, as it were.
Yes.
And that was the character taking on a life of its own. I remember my father dismissing that as a kind of literary conceit. And actually, that's not the case at all. As I've written more and more, you realize that is what your characters should be doing. They should
yes.
be taking on a life of their own.
Yes.
And it's the easy... Writing is its easiest... When that is what they are doing.
Oh, absolutely. When you're
when you're
the conduit for
right, exactly.
their own impetuous actions. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's also, you know, I have the same experience, you know, drawing sometimes where, you know, it's like you get to the end of it and you almost have no relationship to having created it. It's just like this thing happened and
yes.
this is the result of it.
Yes.
You know? And those are always the times that feel the most kind of magical or just kind of like, wow. Like,
well, there's that wonderful... That. Mozart is credited, if you remember, Amadeus back
yeah,
in there,
yeah,
I've got to
yeah.
see again.
Yes,
so
good.
Probably haven't
yeah,
seen
yeah.
that since I was
mm-hmm.
10 or 11.
Yeah, yeah.
But Salieri, his rival, has been given Mozart's original music composition.
Yes.
There's a specific word for that, which I am now totally forgetting.
We'll go with composition.
Anyway.
Yeah.
score. And exactly. His original score, but it's original, like his handwritten
yes.
original
yeah.
thing. And Sally Ray says, well, I wanted to see the original. I said, well, no, that is the original. His wife says that is the original. And he has this line. It's perfect. There are no crossings out. There is nothing changed by any of this. Yes. This is kind of straight from the mind of God onto the page.
Yeah.
And of course, he's horrified because his own work isn't anything like the genius this is. And it is, as it were, acting as a conduit for some third party power something. It's great.
No, whether it is the hand of God or not, I mean, it is the, to me at least, it does feel like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's the experience of like, this came from somewhere and flew through me onto the page or onto the computer or whatever it is. And those are the, you know, it's like for, you know, that is the crack of creation.
Yes.
It's like, you know, they're, it's fun all the time, but it's like those moments are the ones that I think for me, at least as a creative person, like those are the moments that you kind of live for, that you look forward to, or that, you know, feel so good at the end of it. So, absolutely. So my Hoojima flip, I'm going to once again cheat and have two. So, I'm going to start with Henry or Henri, maybe, mm-hmm. Mancini, which is a classic movie music composer. And yes, the Pink Panther theme being one of his most famous. And then Baby Elephant Walk, which is also fantastic.
I don't know that as well. Can you sing that for me? No, I haven't really. Keep going. I don't know what you're talking about. No.
Yes. Well,
we need more.
Look it up. And then I'm blanking on the name of the real title, but the other one that he did like Moon River and a bunch of other like very famous songs and lots of well-recognized movie music. But the other one that I can't remember the actual name of because it's a very pedestrian, odd kind of actual title, but I think of it as the Spy Hunter music. So if you're in my demographic and grew up in the arcades at all, and you remember a video game called Spy Hunter, I will perform that one for you as well. Because yeah, fantastic stuff.
Clearly.
So, Henry Mancini.
Mm. Yep.
A couple of different soundtracks. You know, I'm a subscriber to Apple Music, so there's actually a few different things on there, but I'm sure they're available everywhere that you might find music.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been listening to that a lot in my house. And funny enough, my 2-year-old and my 5-year-old, but my 2-year-old especially loves the Baby Elephant Walk. So that's another one that we'll get
anything
to listen to.
Anything called Baby Elephant Walk is going to be like immediately appealing less than 8.
Yes, you would think so, but he also just is like, again. So we do end up with Baby Elephant Walk on repeat, and then that necessitates all of us marching around in a circle over and over again. So, you know, just lots of Baby Elephant Walking.
I love the way you snuck that in there, like it was the A plus B equals C of Baby Elephant Walk.
In my house,
it comes on. Therefore, we do this.
It works that way. You know, it also happens with the Imperial March. So, you know, there's a lot of walking around in a circle with the Imperial March.
Well, that's completely understandable. That's entirely different.
This is your Star Wars.
Speaking of which, we. Hollywood Bowl this year.
Yes.
I just booked tickets for Empire Strikes Back
live.
Obviously, the John Williams just has to be done. But we did just book tickets for Empire Strikes Back with
That's
the live orchestra.
Awesome.
Which I'm incredibly excited for.
That is awesome. Yes.
Yes.
Well, my other huge flip of the week. Yes.
Well,
I don't know. Without the context, because she does like the music. She does.
But they have the movie as well.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Have the movie because they play the movie
Austin
with the live thing.
Austin is my 5-year-old, by the way. So I think she's not quite ready for Empire, but I cannot wait. You know what's funny? I do get a kick out of the fact that, like, My kids have no context for a lot of what this stuff is. So, like, we'll dance around and march around to the Imperial March, but she has no idea, like, what that's from. So I relish the notion that there will be a day over the next, you know, handful of years where we sit down and watch the Star Wars trilogy, and there will be a moment when the Imperial March goes on, and I'm just gonna watch the light bulb. Like, yes. I just wanna watch her more than I wanna watch the movie. When, you know, these things kind of like ding, and she realizes, right, like, oh, you've been seeding me with this all along. And like, yes, I have.
Yes, we have. Yes.
Austin.
So great.
I am your father. So, anyhow, the other thing I have to talk about, I am so enamored with this, and I may have even mentioned it on a previous episode, but the TV show Legion. Created by Noah Holloway, something like that. But he also is responsible for Fargo, which is also brilliant.
Which is spectacular.
But, oh my God, like, season one was great. Mm-hmm. Season two is transcendent. It is like, they are doing stuff on this show, which I do not know how they're doing on the time and the budget that they have for this. It's an FX series. It's a Marvel series. I mean, it's ridiculous. This thing looks like a movie. This show looks like a movie.
I've got to say it.
It's constructed like nothing else on television. It's the Twin Peaks of superhero shows. It's like they are just pushing boundaries and doing things that no other television show is doing or really even has done. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's one of the few things that I can think of. Like, I mean, I love Game of Thrones, and I will sit and watch Game of Thrones. But for all, you know, all of its wonder, Game of Thrones is a pretty conventional, you know, straightforward, incredibly well-done show. But it's like they're not surprising you with the way the show is made. Like, they're surprising you with the plot.
Fair enough.
They're surprising you with what happens.
Right.
But it's not like, whoa, like, why is there a dance off in the middle of this episode, right? You know, like, why does this episode start with a, you know, minute long monologue about, you know, the conditioning that human beings have? Like, yes. I mean, these are not things that happen on regular TV shows, and these just like become like par for the course on Legion. So
very exciting.
The best quote I heard recently from someone else on social media was that, you know, Legion is the X-Men comic that, you know, Marvel would never allow to be an X-Men comic. It's really insane and in the best possible way. And so it's one of the few things I can think of, you know, probably since Breaking Bad, that it's like, I just like, I'll put it on and I cannot stop watching it.
Right.
Like, it's just like every frame has to be watched and looked at. And it's just they're doing things on that show, which I mean, truly, the way it's shot is like, it looks like nothing else on television. It's constructed like nothing else on television. It's a fully unique and fully realized something. And that's the best compliment that I can give
that's
it.
That's great.
So, highly recommend Legion, and you know, just go along for the ride. Like, I don't even know where it's going at this point, but go along for the ride. It is actually heavily based on a comic series by Bill Sienkiewicz, which I read as a kid. Legion, you know, is actually Charles Xavier's son, which is also interesting. So they make a very slight reference to that in the show without really, you know, saying much about it. But that means, you know, he's the most powerful, you know, psychic mutant on the planet.
Whatever. Yes.
It's just so freaking good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right.
So, with that,
yes.
Please follow along with everything
at
that we're up
M2
to.
Action.
At M2Action on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. And then also follow along with what's going on with Macroverse at Macroverse App. So,
yep.
At Macroverse App on, again, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
That's macroverseapp.media.
and macroverse.media
macroverse.
On the web.
Yeah, sorry.
And all kinds of good stuff there. So once again, if you're a creator that's interested in doing innovative stuff with digital comics, we'd love to talk to you.
Yep.
And even if you're not sure, we'd love to talk to you, because we're definitely interested in the conversation no matter what.
Branching out and really wanting to put together a group of
kind
of just talented individuals who are interested in experimenting.
Trying to do some fun stuff. Yeah. So we'd definitely like to have those conversations. We also do have a Patreon page set up. We're also at M2 Action. So if you want to support what we're up to, you can find us there. Any place that you are listening to this, please rate or review and subscribe to the podcast. It makes a huge difference, helps other people find this thing. So we'll have a link to that from the video as well if you're watching the video. And with that,
that's it.
Have a week. We will see you again next week. Bye.
Good night.